Okay, everyone, let's make a start. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name's Graham Rutherford. I'm an alcoholic. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms, which are kind of across that way, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. Excuse me. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. Excuse me, I'm coughing up a lung. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. Can you continue? I'm sorry.
I'm Jill, an alcoholic. This group practices the spiritual foundation of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe the Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions.
Thanks, Jill. I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So we're glad that you're all here tonight, and what a beautiful day it was today, a beautiful day to be sober. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening, we're starting all over again, so we're going to be discussing step one and the first part of step one. And at this point, I will turn the meeting over to Jill. So there's the step, there's the first reading.
Okay. This was step one. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. And where we're going to start tonight is in the doctor's opinion, and it starts on in the big book on page XXVI, and in the small edition it starts with XX. So it's the paragraph that starts, "The physician who," and I'm going to read this out for you, "the physician who, at our request, gave us this letter has been kind enough to enlarge upon his views in another statement which follows. In this statement, he confirms that we who have suffered alcoholic torture must believe that the body of an alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. It did not satisfy us to be told that we were not in control of our drinking just because we were maladjusted to life, that we were in full flight of reality or were outright mental defectives. These things were true to some extent, in fact, to a considerable extent in some of us. But we are sure that our bodies were sickened as well. In our belief, any picture of the alcoholic which leaves out this physical factor is incomplete. The doctor's theory that we have an allergy to alcohol interests us. As laymen, our opinion is as to its soundness may, of course, mean little. But as ex-problem drinkers, we can say that his explanation makes good sense. It explains many things for which we cannot otherwise account. Okay, do I go on from here?
You can talk, or okay. I'll talk. It's up to you.
Yeah, I'll talk first and turn it to you because I only have one thing. There's one part of this that really stands out to me, and it took me a while to get this into my head. He confirms that we who have suffered alcoholic torture must believe that the body of an alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. And that must believe is means that if I don't believe that, you know, I probably, if I'm still questioning a lot of things, I probably have a little bit more step one in me to come to grips with, that I'm powerless over alcohol. If I believe I'm powerless, that means left to my own devices, I will always pick up a drink, always. So I must believe that if I put any alcohol in my body in any form whatsoever, I'm going to set in motion something that's totally out of control. It is going to have total control over me. And I believe that today. That is my experience. Graham?
Yeah, I think this is a great paragraph. And like Jill said, it really starts to get down to, I suppose, what my experience is and what AA says is wrong with me. And, you know, you can go online or you can go and see a therapist or you can study alcoholism studies, and there's all these different models of alcoholism, and you can get all up in your mind and intellectualize all this. If you want to do that, have at it. We have no monopoly on treatment for alcoholism. But what this is saying is exactly what Jill says, and it's my experience. And my experience is this. When I drink alcohol, something happens to me that does not happen to most other people who are non-alcoholic. Now, that's just a fact, and it's a fact born out of my experience that I'm not making up. It really happened to me. And what happens to me is, as soon as I take a drink of alcohol, it just seems like a great idea to have another drink of alcohol. And then what happens once I've had two drinks of alcohol is it seems like a superb idea to have another drink of alcohol. And now by the time I've had three drinks of alcohol and I've arranged to meet the woman I say I love at 6 o'clock and it's 5:45 and I'm with the guys and somebody's getting the next round in, you know what? She'll understand. I'll just have a quick one. And the next thing you know, it's like I've got magnetic shoes and somebody turned the power on. And it's 1 o'clock in the morning and I'm getting thrown out the bar in a blackout. And that happened to me over and over again. And I didn't realize that that wasn't happening to most people that drink alcohol. That is an abnormal physical reaction to the chemical alcohol. What it does to me is I want more of it. And it just seems like a good idea. It doesn't. I'm when I drink a drink of alcohol, I wasn't saying, oh my gosh, I'm having an abnormal reaction. What I was saying was, yeah. And I would become more thirsty. And the weird thing is, as the night went on, I would get more thirsty than when I started. So I'm the guy, when the bars closed down, I am working the crowd to see whose house we can go back to, who's got booze, or who's got money left, because I certainly don't have any. Who's got money left that they can buy a carry-out that we can take with us? That's my behavior. And then at the party, when everybody's passed out on the floor, I'm the guy going round picking the half-empty cans up just to get more alcohol, to guzzle more booze. And that's abnormal. There's something wrong with that behavior. And I didn't realize that it was a physical reaction to that. And why is it important that I accept that? I mean, why is that important? It's important because that's one of the key ideas that Alcoholics Anonymous is based upon, is that I have an abnormal physical reaction to alcohol, as well as some other things which we'll talk about later. But that's really a key idea. And just very quickly, this idea of an allergy, you know, we talk a lot in AA about having an allergy to alcohol. So I'm sure that you know people who are allergic to things. I think I dated this lucky lady one time, who she was allergic to yogurt, I believe. And one time she ate yogurt, probably when she was a kid. She had one of those reactions where you have to actually be hospitalized or you're going to die. It was just like, I think your throat swells up and it's really bad. It's a big deal. And that had happened years before I met her. And when I met her, she was in her mid-20s. I was in my late 20s, probably. And never once did that lady eat yogurt or anything with yogurt in it. She would be careful to check that there was no yogurt in the ingredients of any foods that she was eating. She had an abnormal reaction to it. So my abnormal reaction to alcohol isn't that my throat swells up and I need to get rushed into hospital, although that could happen. My abnormal reaction to alcohol is I need to drink more alcohol, and I don't even know that's what's happening. I need more once I start. And that's how the allergy manifests in me.
Okay. It goes on to say, we believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is manifested in an allergy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited to the class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all, and once having formed the habit and found they cannot break it, once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve. I had a psychiatrist years before I came into Alcoholics Anonymous tell me that I had the mind of a chronic alcoholic. And I thought, well, okay, you know, that's cool. All right, what does that mean? And I didn't realize that means that I have this mental obsession with drinking. I'm either thinking about drinking, getting over drinking, thinking about how I'm going to get drunk the next time, what I'm going to do to get the drink, and it dictated everything and everyone that was around me. And it was just a total obsession with alcohol. It was everything I did, every part of my social life, everything had to do with drinking. It had, my friends were drinkers. If they weren't, they had to go. That was, I adjusted my life to my drinking, always. And in there, then they say it is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. In the last 10 years of my drinking, I had very few friends that didn't drink. And the one person, my cousin, came to live with me for a while, and she would see me. I'd sneak out on the back porch before she'd get home and kind of try to belt down a couple. That was my, I was like, I have two. Anyways, and she'd come home and she'd say, I see you're drinking your dinner again. And it was like, damn, how'd she get home so early? That just about wore me out, just trying to keep away from her. So I got to the point where I was living alone. And yet I was taking my bottles, putting them in green plastic bags, driving to dumpsters in other cities, and dumping them out in the middle of the night so that people wouldn't know how much I was drinking. I mean, this took a lot of work. Mm. It was a full-time occupation just hiding the bottles. But when they say here that their problems, they form a habit, I can remember trying to go on the wagon over and over. And I would have things like, I had one friend, and he and I would lay off for a month, 30 days. If we could not drink for 30 days, that would mean we're not an alcoholic. And man, that was a hard time. We couldn't even be around each other for 30 days. But it was like I'd go to the gym, I'd take up some hobby. I've done the go out to the country and become a farmer, come back. I mean, I did all kinds of things, trying to control this, trying to prove that I wasn't an alcoholic. And finally, when I couldn't prove it, and people around me, I was always said I was found out, I had to leave them. I had to go find another. And so when I finally, in the last 10 years of my drinking, I only hung out with people that drank like I did, stumbling down drunks. That I can remember one person telling me, well, sugar, you can't be an alcoholic. I drink way more than you do. And I went, yeah, off the hook again. But but what happens is it's progressive. This part about here, As I have lost control of my drinking, and it was progressive, I mean, I went whole years at time without drinking. But in the last 10 years, I didn't even go a day without drinking. And a lot of times I would get up on Saturday morning and drink like crazy, pass out. I always said I took a nap, but I really passed out. Drink all afternoon, took another nap. And then woke up, and I was doing it by myself. It was just drinking. That's all I have. Thanks.
Yeah, and the interesting thing here is that it says that that craving never occurs in non-alcoholic people. So I didn't really know what an alcoholic was. My parents are not alcoholics, and I never really saw any alcoholics. So my vision of what an alcoholic was, I suppose I got from TV and stuff like that. And, you know, with no disrespect to anybody present, it would typically be an older gentleman that would be living under a bridge with a huge beard, dirty urine-soaked coats, lying around a fire drinking bottles of methylated spirits. That was an alcoholic to me. That's who an alcoholic was. It certainly wasn't me. And the year I came to AA, I just graduated college, you know. So I can't be an alcoholic. And this is really wonderful because it really cuts through that to the nub of the problem. And what it's saying to me is, look back at your own drinking. Look back, what happens honestly when you drink? Does this happen to you? Because if it happens to you, that's a big sign that you are probably an alcoholic. And when I look back through my drinking, the phenomenon of craving happened all the time to me. I started drinking, and then it was like a switch got flipped, and I could not control. And let's be honest, I didn't really want to control, but I could not control how much I drank, and I couldn't guarantee my behavior. And I didn't learn that from my parents. My parents are gentle, sober-minded people. They don't drink. You know, they have a glass of wine now and again. They were never abusive to me. They were nice to me. There was no fights in the home when I was a child. I had a wonderful childhood. I've got three non-alcoholic sisters who have wonderful non-alcoholic lives. And then there's me. So whatever it is that's wrong with me, I can't blame mom and dad. I didn't learn it from them. It just happened to me. So what it's saying is, and my experience of this is, this really sets me apart from non-alcoholics. This is an illness. Alcoholism is an illness. It's not a moral failing. And I felt so bad. I didn't know I was an alcoholic, but because of the way I was behaving, I thought that I was evil and crazy. And I hated myself because of the way I was treating people and because of the way I was behaving. I grew to loathe myself. I grew, by the time I was in my late teens and early 20s, to regularly wish that I was dead. That's how negative I became about myself. And I was all wrapped up in myself. And I didn't know this was an illness. And I didn't know that I had it. And that's a horrible place to be. So I had an illness that there is a solution for, but I didn't even know I had the illness. And I had to drink and drink and drink over and over again and suffer this allergy. Once I start, I can't control how much I drink. On my own, I can't stay stopped. And I had to go through that for 12 years until a drunken Irishman told me to come to AA. And I just didn't know. So in a way, it's comforting to realize, and this doesn't get me off the hook for all the stuff that I did, it's not my fault that I'm an alcoholic. I didn't decide I'm going to be an alcoholic. Do people decide I'm going to get cancer? You know, I'm going to get diabetes. I'm going to get any of the other myriad of diseases that plague the human race. Do people decide I want to get this illness? Come on. So this is an illness like these other illnesses. It has symptoms, and this is one of the key symptoms. So I was asked by the people in AA, go back through your drinking and ask yourself, once you start drinking, have you ever lost control? Have you ever drank much more than you intended? Has that happened more than once? And if I really started to look at drinking episodes that I could remember, the answer was, yeah, that pretty much happens to me every single time that I drink. But it's basically saying if it's ever happened, even one time, that's a red flag. That's a symptom of the illness of alcoholism. So there you go.
I was going to say, in this, we all come from all different walks of life. That's one thing I have to really caution everybody, because I when I first got here, the first time I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I actually compared myself out, because I really wasn't like the rest of you. I didn't stay around long enough to find out what you were like, but I was darn sure I wasn't one. But then I went out and became one, so I was, and I'm back. Okay, this goes on to the paragraph that says, I love this paragraph. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effects produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. To them, the alcoholic life seems a normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontent unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort which comes at once from taking a few drinks. Drinks they see other people taking with impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, the phenomenon of craving develops. They pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over, and unless the person can experience an entire psychic change, there is little hope of his recovery. I can remember thinking, I grew up in a family where everyone was alcoholic. Out of 7 children, 6 of us were alcoholic and or drug addicts. And grandparents are alcoholic. I mean, it was a whole day, we're just running all over the place. But my always said, I'll never be as bad as them. And I just like the effects of alcohol. I don't need to get stumbling down drunk, because I can't see me as I really am. I really was stumbling down drunk. I just thought, I just thought it was ease and comfort. But the sensation is so elusive. Over and over and over, I only meant to have a couple to take the edge off. Mm-hmm. And then when I'm in a blackout doing impossible things, I would come to and think, oh, how did that happen? I didn't mean to, but it did. It was like I have no control over it once I take it. But there's something inside of me that just says, you know, what I need, I've had a bad day. I just need a few drinks to take the edge off. Or I've had a good day. I just need a couple of drinks just to enjoy the rest of the day. And what happened, and this is the big lie for me, after a couple, it's like, I'm just drinking. I mean, I was a very small person when I got here, much smaller than I am now. And I mean, I could polish off at least a fifth a day, and usually closer to a quart a day, easy. And so I took the edge off. I mean, that was, and I can remember at times feeling, when I would be on the times when I wasn't drinking, I would go on these epics, you know, I'm not drinking, you know, and I announced it to everybody, I'm not drinking. It's kind of like, I'm not going to eat chocolate, you know, but this is not drinking, was much bigger deal. I'd be so restless, irritable, and discontent. And when I was trying to get sober, my cousin, the same one that found me on the back porch drinking my dinner all the time, she said, I liked you better when you were drunk. You were easier to, at least eventually, if I drank, I'd pass out eventually. But I was so restless. I was always, a friend of mine always said, you are wound up tighter than a tick. It was like, I was like one of those little Disney toys that, you know, just spin around in circles. And that was just me all the time. And then someone said, you have a very high energy level. No, I'm psychotic. but that thing of being so wound up that the only thing that quieted it before Alcoholics Anonymous was drinking. It would just finally let me relax enough that I would just felt okay in my own skin. Otherwise, I just couldn't stand being in here with me. You know, it was like I was always going to either explode or implode. You know, I was either going to kill you or kill me. Mm-hmm. It didn't matter which. It was just one or the other was going to happen. And it didn't necessarily happen physically. I think John's here tonight, and I think he gets scared when I talk about killing things. Yeah, but it's a natural reaction. You know, it's like I'm gonna die or I gotta kill you. You know, and Drinking took that away to some degree, sometimes. As a friend of mine used to say, you know, you're way too small to be a scrappy fighter, but I was definitely a scrappy fighter. Or as my boss used to tell me, I had the mentality of a pit bull. And so, you know, all of those are, alcohol quieted that to a large degree. And I always saw, when I saw people just have a few drinks and they'd sit back and they'd relax. And I'd have a few and I'd be getting keyed up. Let's go to, I can remember one morning we were drinking, I was in Augusta, Maine at the time. And I worked a night job at that around that time, and we'd been drinking for a couple hours, and we'd actually gone over the fence at the Holiday Inn's pool. And we were swimming in their pool in the middle of the night, and they chased us off. And everyone else was going to go home to bed. And I said, no, let's go to Boston. And I mean, road trip, you know, like, okay. And it's like, I had the ability at one time to talk people into some crazy things. Mm-hmm. And we'd all take, and they were exhausted. I'm going, no, we got to keep going. And it seemed normal to me. And I could keep going and keep going until all of a sudden I would crash. And then when I would crash, I seemed to go into a pit that you couldn't get me out of until you gave me a few more drinks. And the thing is, no matter what my resolve was, they say after we have succumbed to the desire again, I remember one time I moved out to South Hill, Virginia, and I was going to become Mother Earth. I had been given 3 children to raise and a husband who wanted to try tobacco farming. So I went out there and I planted this acre garden, and I mean, I was going to do this. I was going to get this under control. And it never dawned on me, some of the worst drunks in the world live in the country. You know, it just seemed like a good idea. But what happened is, I did that for a while. I did it for almost a whole year. But the desire never left. I always thought, on one day, one afternoon, I'm going to sit down and have a cold beer. And when I succumbed to that, it was cases later, and people were going, oh my God, did you see how much she drank? Mm-hmm. And after a while, it got to where I couldn't be around just average people at a pig picking, because if you never left the beer, the keg, it was kind of noticed. And so I started avoiding stuff like that, and I started more and more drinking by myself or drinking with people who drank like I did. Mm-hmm. And then the remorse. They talk in the big book about the four horsemen, a pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization. And I think I knew when I heard that the first time in AA, that was part of what really drew my attention to the program. They talked about a loneliness that few other people know, like an alcoholic. And it didn't matter. I could have the most, I could have nothing. But that loneliness was always a constant. And it was that sense of just not belonging where I was. And then after I'd done something completely stupid, I would have this terrible remorse, inflated remorse. It wasn't even just average remorse. It was like the end-all, be-all remorse. And then what I felt I had to do was go around and tell people how remorseful I was. Of course, that made it worse. But then I would have this firm resolve. Bill's story talks about this. I would try harder. But the more I tried harder, the more I drank. My progression took off worse as I tried harder. It was like that was almost as big a trigger as anything else, that power-driven, I'm going to stay sober, damn it, at all costs. And as I tried to do that, I drank more and more. It became more and more unpredictable. Mm-hmm. It became more and more outrageous, really outrageous. And I can remember one time a friend of mine used to say, yeah, when I drank, I broke out. And I did too. I knew exactly what she was talking about. I broke out one time in Nevada. It was horrible. And I was sitting there going, how the heck did I get here? And it was like, you kind of put the pieces together and figure it out. But it was like it got worse, and people got worse. And it was almost like, why am I doing this? Mm-hmm. And there was no logical reason for me to be doing what I was doing other than you put a few drinks in me and all bets are off. But that didn't get me sober. And they talk about here, this is repeated over and over and over and over. And it does. It gets repeated. I tried different things, but the same pattern repeated over and over. The players change, but the act is the same. And unless a person can experience an entire psychic change, there is little hope of recovery. When I came in 94, I saw that people kept talking about the book. They had a book. And I thought, oh, good. This is something I can take a book and learn it. Mm-hmm. Who needs these crazy people anyway? So I took the book home with me. Actually, I had a friend a couple years before had given me a volume that she stole from a library, a second edition. But I had that book, and I took it out, and I was reading it, and I got hung up on page 30, where it talks about the ways we try to control our drinking. And I went, you know, they talk about what kind of thinking precedes the first drink. The kind of thinking that goes, I didn't try that. I bet I could do that. And so I put the book on the shelf, took out the drink, and the next almost year and a half, almost killed myself drinking. So that didn't reading the book didn't change my mind. The psychic changed things.
Yeah, I'm like Jill. You know, I didn't really know anything about AA because. In the States, it's kind of trendy to be in recovery, you know, all those stars and all that, they're always going to rehab and whatever. But in Scotland, it's not cool if you don't drink, you know. If you're a man and you don't drink, are you kidding me? This actually happened on Saturday night. I was at a Scottish party with my mum and dad, and this guy, like, pours me a whiskey and, like, sticks it under me, and it's some sort of weird bonding thing, and I just pushed it over the table to my dad, who had a big smile on his face. Because I just can't, and the guy was like, and I'm like, I don't drink, because I actually don't care. Because what he doesn't realize, if I drink that drink, then the party's going to go ugly pretty quickly. Because the problem with me is that I go into a blackout, and then I become dangerously antisocial, physically aggressive with people that I don't like. And I don't really like people anyway, and when I drink, it just exaggerates that. You know, so like Jill said, why do we drink? And I used to think about that a lot. I didn't think about why do I drink, but what I thought about was, why do I do this to myself? Why do I keep doing this to myself? I think about that a lot on those days when I'm wallowing in remorse and self-pity about it had happened again. And what had happened was I had gone out to have fun. I had gone out to have a good time with the kids I was in college with or the people I was in high school with. Great plans to have a good time. And then what happened was I started drinking, got absolutely drunk out of my mind, and then was running around doing stuff that I should never have done. And then, of course, remembered it the next day or people told me about it. I was just horrified. How could I keep, why do I keep doing this? I'm a nice guy. I'm not an idiot. You know, I'm not a rocket scientist either, but I'm not a dummy. Why do I keep doing this to myself over and over and over again? I know the kind of person I want to be. I know the kind of person, I know what's right and what's wrong, and I just can't stop this from happening. And I would think about that all the time. And AA takes all that away for me. And it just says, and if I ask an AA, why do I drink? They say, because it felt good. And that's exactly it. It's no more complicated than that. I love getting drunk. I love the way I feel when I'm drinking. And I didn't realize that's how simple it was. Because like she said, being sober is really the problem. We're going to turn it all on its head now. That sounds crazy. I don't like being sober. I never really liked it. As a kid, I felt very uncomfortable, painfully shy, different from people around me. I just felt very awkward as a child. I was in my mind. I was afraid to do things other children were doing. I always felt everybody was looking at me. And that, I can remember that in elementary school, 6, 7, 8 years old, feeling very, very self-conscious, painfully self-conscious. And that sort of went through me, through life with me. And I have to tell you, when I was 13 and I got that bottle of wine that we stole off my dad and we smashed the top off it and we drank it, it was like, whoa, all that stuff just disappeared, baby. And, you know, it was like, yeah, this is good. And I seemed to realize at that point, not consciously, but I never need to feel that way again. I can just do this and it makes things better. So the real problem, what it's alluding to, is I don't like being sober. I don't like being sober with no alcohol and no drugs. I have a problem living life sober. And I like to escape into this chemically induced fantasy land. And I drink that stuff and it's like sitting on top of a rocket ship. And like Jill was saying, I used to hang out at the start with people that weren't alcoholics. And I didn't understand. It wasn't like that for them. Being sober didn't suck for those guys. They liked themselves reasonably well, like most people do, and they reasonably liked being sober, and drink was just like a laugh. And sometimes those guys would get fallen down drunk as well. But they weren't paying the price that I was paying with that 2-3 day dark depression afterwards when I feel suicidal because of the things I did. I didn't understand that. It wasn't happening to them. They could bear being sober. And I love this bit when it says, my life seems the only normal one. And again, I go back to the fact that I was never taught, I was never given an example of this is how to be an adult, this is how to drink. I just, once I started drinking, I was like, this is wonderful. And I just started doing it all the time. I started stealing to get the money to buy it. I started stealing it from my parents, lying about it, hiding it. Right away, I just went right into that. It was a second nature to me. It felt like a glove. And I didn't realize that this life just seemed normal to me. How does that happen? It's almost like I was born that way. It's kind of weird. Anyway, and you know, Jill was talking about it, and I've certainly experienced it in my life. I just feel, and I've said this a lot, whatever, I just feel sort of disappointed. I feel disappointed in this planet and, you know, the people on it. My family, a big disappointment. Being born in Scotland, it sucks there. It's always raining. It's a disappointment. My sisters, me, I mean, just looking at myself, it's just a big disappointment. You know, and right as from an early age, I'm thinking, why wasn't I born into a family like millionaires? You know, we could have a big pad. And I just, we could get loads of money and stuff. I'm always disappointed. And what I found is that when I drink alcohol, that disappointment goes away, and I start to feel like I'm somebody, you know? It really takes care of that chronic self, low self-esteem that just seems to dog me, you know? And then it overcompensates for that. So I really wasn't happy with being sober, and drinking made it better. That's why I drank. And like Jill said, what I didn't realize was happening was I was actually getting drunk on anticipation of getting drunk. And this would start with me around Tuesday or Wednesday. I was pretty much a binge drinker. I would usually get drunk every weekend. And I would start figuring out the plans for the weekend. I'd have got over the hangover, and now it's Monday, Tuesday, and I'm starting to get a little bit excited. Because maybe we could just pull some pieces together and get something good going on Friday. Go and party. We could go here with these people. And then the next thing you know, I'm really getting into it. But we need some booze, and we need some drugs, and we need all these. We need transport, you know, and we're underage, so we need to get somebody to go and get it, and blah blah. We need to get somebody to get the weed and somebody to get the booze, and this would take up all my time. This is what I thought about all the time. And then the night would arrive Friday, and I was just absolutely electric, because I was going to have fun. And then, like it says, once I start drinking, I take the first drink, and then the drink's now drinking. The allergies kicked in, and I don't even know what's happening, and I must drink. I don't understand that. I have to now continue to drink. And I'll drink until the money runs out or I pass out, and I don't know that that's what's going on. And with me, I usually go into a blackout. And for anybody that doesn't know what that is, that means I'm walking around doing things, but I'm not conscious. And the next day I may have no memory of what I did. And I wasn't doing nice things in those blackouts because I've got a really bad temper. So I was being physically abusive. I'm a perpetrator of domestic violence over a 10-year period against my family, against ladies that were lucky enough to be dating me. Just really savage in those blackouts. And like Jill said, it got worse as I got older. So at first the blackouts would be me rolling around on the floor giggling. And in my early 20s, I'm waking up. The night starts off with a romantic drink with my sweetheart. And then I'm waking up, it's 2 hours later, she's in the closet, and I've got a knife, and I'm trying to kick the closet door down to get her. That's the sort of stuff that happens to me. Or I wake up, and I'm lying on the ground at the front of a gas station, and it's nighttime, and there's some people standing around me looking down at me, and I've no idea where I am or who these people are. And then later on the same night, I'm in the back of a taxi, and I don't know where we're going or who I'm with. That's the stuff that was happening in my mid-20s, right before I came to AA. But that doesn't stop me from drinking, because there's something wrong with me. You know, one experience like that, a normal person would be like, oh my God, I'm never touching that stuff again. But me, I'm like, okay, we're going to have fun tonight.
It'll be different.
It'll be different this time. And it was repeated over and over and over again, and it got worse as I got older. And I didn't know what to do. I didn't know I was an alcoholic. I didn't know that alcoholism's an illness and I have it. And I didn't know what to do. And, you know, it says, unless I can experience an entire psychic change, there's very little hope of his recovery. And, you know, here's a sobering thought. Most alcoholics never get sober. Most alcoholics, you want to know what their life looks like. Their life looks like mine before I came to AA. Going to therapists, psychiatrists, getting the pills off the doctor. So I just take a bunch of pills and try and change the way I feel that way instead. You know, getting DUIs, getting drunk in publics, showing up at all these treatment facilities and so on over and over again, and then eventually just dying. Maybe dragging a husband or wife and kids through all of that pantomime. It's absolutely tragic. And as far as we know, this illness has been around as long as people have been drinking. And there's never really been, the medical community, to my knowledge, doesn't really seem to have do they have rooms full of sober drunks? I don't know. I've never seen them. Guy just gave me some pills and said, good luck. So, you know, really, this is a very serious illness. Because what I will do, wonderful me, I will completely destroy myself. And that's pretty rough. So unless I can change completely, there's very little hope of recovery for people like me who have that allergy to alcohol and who can't stay stopped on their own.
Okay, now we're going to go down to the paragraph that starts, I do not hold with those who believe that alcoholism is entirely a problem of mental control. I have had many men who have, for example, worked for a period of months on some problem or business deal which was to be settled on a certain date favorably to them. They took a drink a day or so prior to that date, and then the phenomenon of craving at once became paramount to all other interests, so that the important appointment was not met. These men are not drinking to escape. They are drinking to overcome a craving beyond their mental control. There are many situations which arise out of the phenomenon of craving which cause these men to make the supreme sacrifice rather than continue the fight. My sponsor pointed out something really great about the second sentence I read, but I'm going to get to that second paragraph. But the first one is, I can remember at times having something that was so important to me. I was taking some college classes at the time at Wesleyan, and it was really important to me. I really wanted to finish my degree and do this. But I was plagued with, this was getting towards the beginning of the end of my drinking, but I was so obsessed with drinking that I had a paper that was due, and what I thought I would do is just drink some wine while I was trying to put the paper together. Seemed like a good idea at the time. But the whole thing was I couldn't do it. I couldn't make it happen. I couldn't leave the booze alone to do that. And when I drank that, I quit the course rather than finish it. I made the sacrifice because it was more important for me to feel comfortable, or have the illusion, because I wasn't really all that comfortable when I was drinking. I was comfortable for short periods of time, kind of like what the steps are doing for me now, but yet The craving for that alcohol and the desire for it to be what it was when I first began drinking was so strong as I continued. I kept trying to capture the sense of ease and comfort. And it was funny because sometimes I would drink and just totally go into a blackout immediately. Sometimes I would drink and drink and drink and never really what I would call feel drunk. But I never got that ease and comfort. It's like the ease and comfort disappears, or the illusion of it. It had disappeared a long time before I quit drinking. And I never realized that you can't really recapture it, but I was always trying to recapture it. The second part of this, there's another part. These men were not drinking to escape, they were drinking to overcome a craving beyond their control. I was in the hospital one time for 3 or 4 days for alcohol poisoning. I had drank so much. My heart was just pounding, coming out of my chest. It was just, and they put me in the hospital because they were afraid I was going to have a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
And my blood pressure kept going up and down. It was alcohol poisoning, where I found out. And so I come out of the hospital, and these people were very concerned for me. And they took me home, and I said, I'm okay now. I'm going to take a shower and get some rest. Well, what I did was I went to the kitchen sink, and I hadn't had any booze for 4 days. And there was a bottle of bourbon on the kitchen sink, and literally my hand was like this, pouring that glass. And I stood there right at the sink until I got down most of that glass of bourbon. I stopped shaking then. I wasn't drinking because I wanted to drink. I was drinking because I needed it so bad. And that was one of the first wake-up calls. It didn't make me stop drinking, but I kept thinking, this is horrible. And I was just drinking it. And it was just like, and then for that, about a nanosecond, it was like, okay, it's okay. Until it wasn't okay anymore. Because I don't leave it alone. And I didn't wind up back in the hospital that day, but I was at my decline became so apparent. It was really, everything about me was declining at that time. And this was really the important part of this, what I read was, there are many situations which arise out of the phenomenon of craving which cause men to make the supreme sacrifice. The supreme sacrifice is to take the drink. I'm willing to give up families, jobs, friends, everything, cars, anything, to drink. And I did it over and over. I was given some great gifts in my life, awesome gifts. And I was willing to say, I was one of the few people at work that was working their way backwards. I mean, I was just so thankful they had a heart for me and didn't fire me. But I was willing to give up a lot for that drink. And it didn't matter. I didn't care. I think that's the thing I hated most about alcoholism today, is the sense of I didn't care. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was so dead inside. There wasn't a whole lot that could get to me. And the beauty of this program in here is they make us usefully whole again. And I care very much about life and people today. But when I got here, I didn't care about anything. And I was willing to sacrifice that for the drink. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Yeah, I have the experience with this that, you know, I think to someone who's watching me go through this, like my parents, for example, they're watching me do this, behave this way. And friends that I had through the years, friends that I lost because of my behavior when I was drinking, who were just horrified at the way I was behaving, they watched someone like me. And I'm like an actor. I put on a show, and I can probably get you to like me, you know? But really, there's a lot more to me behind the facade. And it's not pretty, especially if I drink. And like Jill, I had to be very careful where I drank and who was going to see me once I started drinking. I knew that much about myself. So I would only drink around other animals like me because I knew they wouldn't judge me and reject me. But I didn't realize these other people were watching me and they were thinking, why doesn't he just stop doing that? Just stop. Pull yourself together. Grow up. Stop behaving like that. It's crazy. And they're confused. So people, a lot of times, didn't feel sorry for me. They felt angry at the way I was treating them and the way I was behaving. Why doesn't he just pull himself together? And that's because they misunderstood what was wrong with me. They thought I had a drink problem. And the great news is, if you've got a drink problem, just stop drinking, you'll be fine. I don't have a drink problem. I've got alcoholism. I have a sober problem. I don't like being sober. So what's wrong with me? And like it says, this idea of mental control. I just use my willpower. I'm not going to drink today, you know. And the last time I drank, I remember vividly, I swore I was not going to drink at that party with my new colleagues for my first job out of college. Yeah? Come on over to my house. We'll have fun. Yeah, I had fun all right. And 8 o'clock, standing there, feeling extremely uncomfortable, sober, drinking tea, I believe. And the party's getting going. And then the thought comes into my mind, just have a beer and relax. Now, I'm a violent blackout alcoholic, and the thought's saying to me, just have a beer and relax. Cool, man. And I'm like, okay. And I've got hundreds of experiences in 12 years telling me, no, don't do it. And I'm like, okay. And then it all starts up again. I'm in a blackout. It's crazy time. So there's something wrong with my brain. Because if we went up onto the roof of this building tonight and I yelled at you guys, jump, jump, something in your brain's going, no, don't do it. That Scottish guy's crazy. Don't jump. It's protecting you from harm. If we went beside the road there and there was some cars coming in, I said, come on, let's run at the road. You would all be like, no, don't. Your brain would say, don't run, stay still. So why is it with alcohol, which has done a lot more damage to me than jumping off a silly little roof? It's destroyed my whole life and all the relationships I have with my family that love me. Why is it my brain doesn't say, no, don't take the drink? What my brain does is it says, it's going to be cool, big man, just have a drink. So that's really what's wrong. There's something wrong with my mind that doesn't protect me from what is a harmful substance for me as an alcoholic. And so I don't have mental control when it comes to alcohol. And non-alcoholics can't understand that, because for them it's like, just stop, you idiot. You know? So it's not my job to convince them. It's my job to convince me that that's what's wrong with me. I don't really care what other people think. I don't know if you got that from me. So, yeah. I think that's all I'm going to say on that, Jill. Sorry.
Okay, we're in this with this paragraph. All these and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. This phenomenon is suggested, as we have suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. It has never been, by any treatment with which we are familiar, permanently eradicated. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. And when I look at this, I always thought, oh my God, this is horrible, this is terrible. But the truth is, 1 out of 10 people is alcoholic. So there is a bunch of us. There's not a whole lot that really do much about it. I mean, I've got a brother who thinks that sobriety is 11 months in the county jail. You know, you get your teeth fixed, put on a few pounds, and you get a good physical. And you go out and you do it again. So that works for him. But we are a distinctive group, and people don't understand that. I've tried to explain it a few times to people, and they always look at me kind of like, what? And a lot of people think it's a moral issue or all kinds of things. They don't have to understand. The only one that has to understand is me. Mm-hmm. And I got it. I got it bad. And so if I can understand that and I'm willing to do something different, I've got a chance. And they say here, the only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. I have tried a bunch. I've gone to doctors, psychiatrists, I've taken pills, I've done all kinds of things. The only thing that's kept me sober, and my sobriety date is November 1996, the only thing that's kept me sober is Alcoholics Anonymous. And actually, I have... Okay, that's better this way. Actually, my life today is better than it has ever been in my life. Go ahead. You're fine.
Yeah, and just to briefly finish up, you know, it's telling me again, just in case I didn't get it, the other 6 times it told me. That if when I start drinking, I can't control the amount I drink, that is a key symptom of the illness of alcoholism. And the only relief they have to suggest from that is that I never drink. And when I came to AA, I was probably the youngest guy at that meeting. I was sweet 25. And I'm looking around and they were all a lot older than me. And I'm thinking, these guys maybe need to do 10, 20 without a drink. But I've got like 55 years of not drinking. Are you kidding me? Because they go on about that one day at a time. But I'm smart and I'm like, they mean I just never ever drink again. Because what I wanted to do was control drinking. Just have a few and have a good time and have fun. So this idea of entire abstinence is really the start of the whole AA program. If I really accept that I am an alcoholic with alcoholism, alcoholics can't drink. That's it. It's done. If I really accept deep down that I'm an alcoholic, according to what this says, then I also accept that no matter what happens today, I cannot take the first drink. The first drink is the one that gets me drunk. It's not number 5, it's not number 10, it's not bottle number 2. It's the first drink of alcohol that gets me drunk. And AA is all about restoring that broken part of my mind that tells me it's okay to drink, to give me a mental defense against taking the first drink. That's what the steps are for. But I can't emphasize this enough, as it was emphasized to me, and I'm going to shut up, I promise. What these people kept telling me all the time at every meeting I went to when I was new was, if you don't take the first drink today, you cannot get drunk. And no matter what happens today, do not pick up the first drink. Get your ass to a meeting. And that has really, you know, that and the steps and the fellowship and all the other stuff we do in AA has proved to be a design for sober living. Okay, so we're going to finish up now. And I'll read this green self-supporting card as we pass this basket. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup and central office, local services, district area, and the GSO remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. At this point, are there any AA-related announcements? Yes. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Kevin.
The District Archives Committee is bringing together a old timers list, so anybody with 20 years of sobriety or more, come up to me afterwards and we'll get shit set up.
Thanks, Kevin. Yeah. Hi, Leslie. Okay, thank you. So Friday, Saturday night, there's no meetings at the church across from Starbucks. Thank you. Any other announcements? Dono?
My name's Dono, alcoholic. The Plymouth State Assembly, which is a voting assembly, this one, is the 12th, this Friday, at the Holiday Inn off of Greenwich Road. It's right off of Newtown Road. Greenwich Road, right off of Newtown Road. Right at the bottom of the Newtown Road exit. Just goes straight between the Denny's and the 7-Eleven. And it's 12, 13, 14. It starts at 3 o'clock, and then one of my sponsors will be there at 3. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Donald. Any others? Okay. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hand. Thank you. Newcomers, is there anyone in the first 30 days of sobriety? Yes.
Hi,
Mike. Hi, Mike. Welcome. Anybody else? No? Okay. I point out that literature is available. It's beside the coffee. There's some big books and meeting lists and so forth there. Please see any home group member after the meeting if you want to take some of that stuff. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor please raise your hand? Thank you. Closing, thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight. All are welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Bella Pizza, which is on Collie Avenue in Norfolk. And please come along. It's a lot of fun. It's $5 pizza night, so you can gorge yourself on a pizza for $5. Unbelievable. Love America. Somebody who's got a big book has volunteered to read the last two paragraphs on page 164.
She's got one right here.
My name's Kevin.
Hey, Kevin.
Our book is meant to be suggestive of us. We realize we have only a little. God will constantly display more to you than to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thanks, Kevin. Those that care to join us, we're going to form a circle and say the Lord's Prayer. Thank you.
Yeah.